may be seated. Our next case is 12-2097, In Re AG, a minor child. For the appellant, Mr. Whitcomb.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. My name is Howard Whitcomb, and I represent the appellant AG in this case. Appellant is a minor child under the age of 18 years old. The matter comes before this court upon the trial court's denial of appellant's request for leave to attend and participate in a trial court proceeding to which she was a party and to which she had a direct interest in the outcome of the case. Appellant posits that in so doing, the trial court's ruling violated her right to due process as guaranteed by the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and Article 1, Section 16 of the Ohio Constitution. A reading of both constitutions clearly establishes such rights for all persons, irrespective of age.
Counsel, let's make sure we understand each other on the status of the court itself. It was a juvenile court, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
But it was dealing with a domestic relations case or dispute in the role of a common pleas domestic relations court, was it not?
It originated that way, Your Honor, in the Henry County Common Pleas Domestic Relations Court.
And it was certified over.
It was transferred to the juvenile court in Henry County and then was certified to the Ottawa County Court. So it went from juvenile court to juvenile court.
But still, the role that the court was playing was one of a domestic relations court.
Correct. This was a post-divorce
And so there's an argument about whether the juvenile rules apply or the rules of civil procedure. The rules of civil procedure apply to domestic relations courts, do they not?
I believe they apply to both domestic relations and to juvenile courts.
Right.
And specifically in the appointment of a guardian ad litem, juvenile courts routinely rely upon Civil Rule 75B2 in the appointment of a guardian ad litem and making a child a party in an action. It's a discretionary action on the part of the trial court, but routinely juvenile courts do that.
Is there anything in the civil rules about open courts?
There is not.
So we have to fall back to the Ohio Constitution?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is there any case that we have that says you can close the court? There is a procedure for that, isn't there? And that wasn't followed here, was it?
Well, if you follow the juvenile rules of procedure, there is a procedure, Rule 27, A1, I believe, is,
right,
is the rule that does provide the court some guidance in terms of who may be excluded from the proceedings and who may not be excluded from proceedings, and specifically persons with a direct interest cannot be excluded from those proceedings. But that's if you are under the understanding that the juvenile rules are applicable in this case. And according to the Sixth District Court of Appeals, they were not.
Mr. Whitcomb, it is rather confusing as to what type of proceedings we have here and who the parties to the action were. Could you be a little more specific on exactly what proceedings the appellant is arguing she was not allowed to attend?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a motion filed by appellant's father in September requesting that he be granted unsupervised visitation and companionship with the appellant.
Was this a post-divorce case in domestic relations court? Or again, explain why it's in front of the specific court and what type of case we're talking about here.
The case was originated in the Henry County Domestic Relations Court and was transferred to the juvenile division, and I'm not sure why it was transferred to the juvenile division of the Henry County Court.
But that was post-divorce?
That was post-divorce. And then at some time in 2006, because the appellee father and the appellee mother no longer resided in Henry County, but appellee mother resided in Ottawa County. There's a petition to have it transferred, and the Ottawa County Juvenile Court accepted it.
Okay. What's the status since the initial trial court determination was, what, 4 years ago, 3 years ago?
The determination to prevent the appellant from participating occurred in October of 2010.
Right. But in the meantime, while this litigation has worked its way here, what's the status of this young lady's visitation? Has she, there was no stay, was there, either in the Court of Appeals or?
The Court of Appeals did grant the appellant's request for a stay in March of 2011, granted that stay. It remained in effect until November of 2012 when the appellate court issued its decision. We applied for a stay in
our court,
and it was granted earlier this year. So there is a stay in effect right now.
So that's the status at the present time, is she's not required to visit with her father.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But she will be 18 in December.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So in the normal course of things, our opinion might not be out before she turns 18, and then this becomes academic or moot. An important question, but as to this young lady, it would not affect her life in terms of requirements to visit with her father, would it?
No, it wouldn't, Your Honor. You're absolutely correct. And I think the relief we're requesting from this court is twofold. The first is to vacate and dismiss the trial court's decision regarding the constitutional right question. But probably more importantly, we're seeking an algorithm or test that can be applied in future cases, which would address the issue of the due process rights of a minor and when it's appropriate to restrict or abridge those rights based on a test that would weigh the governmental interest to protect the child versus the individual rights of the child. And that is probably the more paramount outcome of this case that we're seeking.
At what age would those rights vest?
Well, the child would turn as an adult at the 18th birthday.
Yes.
For
example, we know in this case there's been a lot of discord between the father and the mother, and the child has been taken by each, and it's all in the record. But the fact is, would a six-year-old or a three-year-old have the same right as your client? And would that party be able to come in and make a statement to the court that might be binding if we agree with your position?
Your Honor, I think from a practical standpoint, the answer to that question is no. I think that the system already has in place some protections for the juveniles. For instance,
and why don't we supply those to your client?
Well, Civil Rule 75B2 in the appointment of a guardian ad litem attempts to address that specific issue. In other words, the trial court can appoint a guardian ad litem to serve the best interest of the minor child.
Why didn't that happen here then?
Well, it didn't happen here, Judge, because the guardian ad litem's recommendation differed from the appellant's recommendation, or wishes, I should say. So there was a conflict. And now the question becomes, if there's a conflict, does the child have a right to advance her wishes and desires?
Which brings me back to my first question. At what age does that vest? Does a seven-year-old have the right to say, gee, I don't like you?
I think
a five-year-old have that right?
I don't think that there's a bright line as to age. Right now, I've suggested that we look at the competency requirements of a child to testify, and that happens to be 10 years old. But I caution the use of 10.
We've had children testify and been competent at a much younger age.
That's correct, but there's a test that the court must go through in determining whether the child is it's presumed competent to testify if you're greater than 10. It is not presumed if you're under, and there's a test that you must follow.
We're familiar with that.
Well, and I've suggested that such a test could also apply, but not necessarily at the age of 10.
Counsel, I guess I'm having trouble going down that line. I think we've heard a lot of testimony here that this is a contentious divorce case, and they're fighting over a child. And my question is not the right of the child to testify in the proceeding. What possible reason can there be to exclude the child from being present at the hearing? That's the part I don't get.
Well, that's why this case is before this court. It's appellant's position that she should have been. She was of sufficient maturity, age, and intelligence to meaningfully participate, sit next to her counsel, and participate in the proceedings.
In answer to Justice O'Donnell's questions, though, how do we know that? Was there a competency hearing by the court of this child saying, well, she looks squared away, she's mature, let her in the courtroom?
Unfortunately, Justice O'Neill, there is no such test for the trial courts currently to use as there would be under Evidentiary Rule 601 or the other statutory requirements for competency. There is no such test for determining whether a child should participate in the proceedings.
Counsel, in the Court of Appeals stated that there was an opportunity for an in-camera interview with the court on the wishes of your client.
That
did
is
that
correct.
Occur?
Yes, it did, twice, Your Honor.
Okay, so she had the opportunity to talk to the judge directly, is that what you're saying?
She did, with the guardian ad litem present on, I believe, both occasions.
All right, so at least the participation, if you want to call it that, was in effect the in-camera, and what you're saying is she wished to be present at the motion that was filed in juvenile court. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. I didn't finish the original question. When Father filed his motion for unsupervised visit, appellant hired counsel and filed a motion of her own to terminate all visitation. So there was a dispute between her and her father. She asked the court to attend and participate in the trial proceedings, which I think lasted 5 days, 4 days the first time and 5 days the second time. 31 witnesses, I believe, was the number of witnesses presented, and she did not have the opportunity to hear any of that testimony.
Was her attorney present in the courtroom for those proceedings?
The attorney was present.
So there's no problem with a child being represented by an attorney in these circumstances?
There is no problem, Your Honor,
and in fact, when a GAL, a guardian ad litem, is proffering a recommendation as in the best interest of the child, it's not unusual for a child to have feelings, especially an older child, over the age of 10, you know, maybe 12 to teenage years, to have interests that are contrary in their mind to the recommendations of the guardian ad litem, correct?
That is correct.
That happens
frequently.
Frequently. So the only question before us was the young lady properly excluded from being at the table with her counsel?
Correct.
Counsel, so I'm at least straight on the background. And we have a lot of people always watching these cases. When we say things were bad between these parents, that's an understatement, right? Both parents, did both of them take this child in violation of court orders? The mother took her to Russia?
The mother at one point did take her to Russia.
In violation of court order or not?
I don't believe it was in violation technically of the court order.
And the mother and the child were beaten and somehow the child ends up with a father in another country?
Well, the first event occurred when the child was 4 years old, and that was when father had taken her to the western states and then to Costa Rica, and it was returned by coming back in through Key Largo, Florida.
So it would be fair to say this is an extreme case of of two people fighting over a child, like two kids fighting over a teddy bear.
It is, Your Honor, and their 5 days of trial covered a significant history of these two parents in the presentation.
And in the context and with that background, the guardian ad litem, that is the guardian appointed by the court for this young woman who is now, what, 16?
17 and a half.
Well, no, but at the time.
At the time, right.
That the guardian's involved and this motion is filed, is recommending that she go with a father that she doesn't want to go with.
Correct, Your Honor.
And at that point, she hires counsel.
Correct.
And counsel comes in, and the court accepted her motion. Correct.
Court accepted her motion.
So now she's in the case.
That's right? Correct. Yes.
But she's not allowed in the courtroom.
That's correct. That's what happened.
And that's what it boils down to. The court has not dismissed her motion or thrown it out. It's being litigated in the courtroom, and she's not allowed to be present while her own motion that the court has accepted.
That is correct.
It's being litigated. All right.
Did she claim a participatory right or just a presence right?
Both, attendance and participation.
Okay, as a party?
Well, she was a party. As a party, yes.
She was a party in the domestic relations court?
No, she wasn't a party in the domestic relations court, but she came a party in 2006 when it was transferred to Ottawa County. She became a party because a guardian ad litem was appointed for her. And Rule 27A1, it's a discretionary decision on the part of the trial court, but once the trial court believes that the interests need to be served of the child, then they make the child a party and appoint a guardian ad litem.
And so is your view then that it was an abuse of discretion on the part of the trial court to exclude her? Is it that issue?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that the court acted in an unreasonable, unconscionable, or arbitrary manner, that there was no guidance for the court to base its decision. The court in its decision in determining to exclude the appellant stated clearly she had no constitutional right to participate in a proceeding that involved a dispute of her parents. The court in saying that did not actually consider the fact that the child had filed her own motion, and it was really between the child and her father. So that's the real premise. This is a constitutional question.
Well, and the court didn't consider the open courts amendment. The Constitution is very specific. The courts of this state shall be open to everyone.
Well, it didn't do that too, Your Honor. You're right. We were under the impression that the juvenile rules of procedure were being exercised up until the decision by the Court of Appeals said, well, wait a minute, Juvenile Rule 1C says, you know, for parent-child relationships, juvenile rules don't apply. Up to that point, however, there was no objection by any of the parties saying that you can't use juvenile rules, and the juvenile rules were used extensively during the course of the trial proceedings.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hallett.
May it please the court, Honorable Chief Justice O'Connor, and other esteemed members of the Supreme Court, greetings. My name is Timothy W. Hallett. I'm from Wauseon, Fulton County, Ohio. I represent the appellee, the father of this minor child, A.G. The father's not here. He lives in North Carolina. And in all honesty and candor, he doesn't really care about the issue before this court. As Judge Pfeiffer pointed out, it is a moot issue to him. He will not have visitation with his daughter. It's not just because of the stay issued by this court, however. Prior to that, 9 days, in fact, prior to that, on June 17th of this year, 2013, he volunteered, signed a consent entry, terminating all of his rights, all of his interest in seeing his daughter for
counsel,
her good.
Counsel, let's talk about what we're here for today, though. I'm not the future, but the past, because we're being asked to make a policy for the state of Ohio. As I understand this case, through the guardian ad litem, the child actually was participating in the action by filing motions. I don't understand how someone can be permitted the right to participate in an action and then be prohibited from being present when the action is decided. Can you explain that to me?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd be happy to. This case has already been pointed out, started as a domestic relations case, certified to the juvenile court in Henry County. Thereafter, after pending motions, it was recertified by the juvenile court to Ottawa County. Mm-hmm. It was and remains a domestic relations case. Under Juvenile Rule 1C, it certainly says that the rules of civil procedure apply, and therefore, Rule 75 governs this case. In fact, there was an order of the court alluded to by counsel issued, I think, in 2010 that basically appointed, actually it was in 2006, that actually appointed the guardian ad litem. It repeated or recited the actual rule of 75C.
I understand that, counsel, but your opposing counsel has said that she became a party to the domestic relations action that's before us today. How do you have a party able to file motions and not be permitted to be in the courtroom? I don't understand that.
When I submit to you that she was not a party.
You disagree?
I disagree.
Okay.
75C certainly allows for the appointment of a guardian ad litem, and it allows for a child to be joined as a party. There was no order ever in effect as of the 2006 order that joined this child. Also, you refer back to the statute of 310904, and you see who the parties to a domestic relations case are. Who has the right to invoke the continuing jurisdiction of the court?
Sure.
The parents. It's not the child. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Over
the
40 years I practiced, I seem to learn something every day.
I want to focus on your certification.
I should have
filed a motion. Counsel, there's a question being asked of you.
I want to focus on the certification from a domestic relations division to the juvenile division. To be done properly, it has to be done under 310906. Did you do it with permission of juvenile court where they accepted it, or did the domestic relations court make a finding that at that time neither one was suitable and they transferred it or certified it to juvenile court under an abuse, neglect, dependency case?
This was never abuse, neglect, and dependency case stated in the order transferring it to Ottawa County.
So
is that the parties resided outside of Henry County at that point, and literally it was for the convenience of further litigants. So it was not and did not ever become subject to the juvenile rules. It still was in the exception that it's either a parent-child case or, as I argued with the Sixth District Court of Appeals, that it was within the framework of a related issue to divorce, as child support, as custody, as visitation does come upon for post-domestic relief.
Mr. Hallett, I want to go back to your beginning when you were telling us about the father. Now, he's residing out of state.
Yes, he is.
And where was your argument going? Are you suggesting this is moot now?
I do think that it's moot. Literally, what is before the court is whether or not the court wants to find a constitutional entitlement for a child in a domestic relations case to be at table, to file motions, to... Yes, they have the right to an attorney, guardian ad litem, but their interest is derivative through their parent. Their parent advocates their case, and actually that had been done up until the point.
What happens when the parent's interests are adverse to the child's?
Well, the statutes, again, are very clear. An attorney can be appointed, and indeed an attorney was appointed.
Correct.
The same thing comes about with the guardian ad litem.
And I don't think anybody is questioning the propriety of having an attorney represent AG.
Not at all.
But the crux here is whether or not she could have been, should have been excluded from being in the courtroom during the 5 days of testimony that the judge excluded her from. And what is the basis for the reason that the judge excluded her?
Well, this case had been ongoing for a considerable period of time. The court certainly had an historical context of it. And literally,
and she was intimately involved with each step of the process, having been the pawn that was, you know, back and forth between the parents from Russia to the Keys to out west. I mean, the whole, she was privy to it all because she was a participant in it all. So if the judge was attempting to protect a 15-year-old, and I believe she was 15 years old at the time, from the information that would have been adduced at this hearing or this trial, he wasn't really protecting her from anything she didn't already participate in.
This is an interesting question in that they would, the appellant would have you rule that it's a constitutional entitlement, whereas you pose what would have harm been her intimately involved in this case. Well, that might have been a discretionary issue of the court. Maybe the court abused the discretion. I almost wish that the court had allowed her. I don't think any further harm could have been done, to be honest with you, but it doesn't raise to the issue of a constitutional entitlement. In so many other cases, to have the child present, to have the child a participant, could be extremely harmful. In my 40 years of practice, we tried to keep children out of the courtroom, and in this particular case, into the classroom. 5 days. This child, the record would show, was not getting very good grades. 5 days away from the classroom would have had a significant impact.
Well, counsel, let me ask you this then. I'm over here at your right. Let me ask you this. Doesn't basic due process demand for this child a right to be heard in a meaningful fashion? And I think we've gone past the hurdle. She's got a lawyer. She's got a guardian ad litem. They're at the table.
Absolutely. She
but
has
in a
due
meaningful
process.
Fashion, in a meaningful fashion is what the Constitution demands. And I still haven't heard from you. What is the rationale that when her motion about her visitation with her father is being heard and argued by her lawyer, what's the rational basis to say, and oh, by the way, you'll be out in the hallway?
The appellant has made the issue that sitting at counsel table during this hearing is not participation. The court, trial court, as well as the Sixth District Court of Appeals, found that she had due process afforded to her according to the statutes in every respect, and that she participated vigorously.
Do you
First
agree
of
with
all,
that?
She had it.
Do you agree with that today?
I do, absolutely.
In answer to my question, that you can't be there and you've got due process.
She was there. She was there through her attorney. She was there through her advocate, her mother. This was the same motion that had been filed repeatedly for 8 years. This had been going on. I don't want to come. I don't want to visit.
But does that comply with the Open Courts Amendment to the Constitution? She's now in not just through her guardian ad litem. She's in through her private attorney who says, files a motion that the court's considering, saying, I think the guardian ad litem did not make a recommendation that's in my best interest. The guardian ad litem, I believe, said custody ought to be transferred to the father. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
So that would have come to, as a shock to her when the debate started over visitation with the father. So she then says, this person that was appointed by the court to protect me, in my view, isn't protecting me, so I'm getting my own lawyer, and he's going to protect me. And he filed a motion, and the court accepted that, and that motion's on the table when court's being held, and the Constitution says the courts are open.
Well, the courts are open, Your Honor. I'm not going to disagree with that. And everybody has a right to be heard. But certainly we deal with matters of law. Because in the juvenile rules itself, if we want to not apply them but look at them, it says that a court may excuse a juvenile in a delinquency, in a abuse, or that similar types of cases. So it allows the court discretion to remove someone or not allow them to be a party to a particular case of which they may have a direct interest. So therefore, the court itself is vested with a degree of discretion to reasonably exercise it without precondition or arbitrariness, and they could, as they did in this case, not allow the
child. But her surrogates were allowed in, she's not.
Excuse me?
Her surrogates were allowed in, she's not.
Absolutely, and that's the case holding. I've cited these cases in my brief that succinctly follow different courts as they've been applied from 1980 to the present.
Let me ask you two questions then, Mr. Hallett. You indicated on June 17th that your client filed a motion to terminate rights.
He entered into a consent judgment entry that was filed on
what
that
court?
Date with the court, in the trial court, the juvenile division of Ottawa County.
A consent decree?
Yes, it was.
And then he abrogated all of his rights, or he consented to?
That's correct. No communication by phone, letter, email. No attempts will be made to visit with this child.
Does that moot this case?
In terms of the father, absolutely. The can has been successfully kicked down the road.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if our decision doesn't come out until AG's birthday in December of this year, she will be 18.
That's correct.
And she, as an adult, is no longer subject to any of this.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. In this particular case, but your holding will affect so many other children.
Yes.
And they may be able to assert, I want to be present. I want to become a party.
And what I understood was, in the domestic court, your position is that there is no right under, was it 310904?
That's correct.
No right of a child to participate because it's a parental right. But this case got transferred to the juvenile court, and those rules are different, are they not?
They are different, but I don't think they're applicable to this because they are specifically juvenile rules are specifically excluded under the Juvenile Rule 1 scope, and that says that when a matter is in relation to a divorce, and I submit that custody visitation.
You think that because this was a domestic situation and it was transferred to the juvenile, that Juvenile Rule 1 excludes all of the juvenile rules and you make the application of 310904?
That's exactly right, and specifically 2153.
Which
also does too.
Which thereby statutorily precludes the child's participation other than through the guardian ad litem or a counsel.
There is no statute that specifically excludes her, Your Honor. There's nothing in the Constitution specifically or statute that says she can't.
Yes.
It's that I think these issues would come on a case-by-case basis, and then it would be reviewed on an abuse of discretion or in the discretion of the court. Like
thank
exactly
you, counsel.
Witnesses.
Counsel.
I have
thank
one
you.
I have one question with respect to the constitutional issue here. Is there any authority that says once a person files a motion, due process requires them constitutionally to be present at trial?
I have not found anything of that nature at all, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
I would indicate that the course of these proceedings, I was the trial attorney, and I sat through the 5 days of trial and had to address all of the witnesses presented, and I presented witnesses on behalf of my client. And I will be honest in telling you, I was handicapped with not having a client there to spontaneously provide me comments and write down impressions and be able to review exhibits instantaneously as they're being presented. And I was unable in being able to do that, and therefore, I think that my representation, while it might have been zealous, probably wasn't as good as it could have been.
Do you have any cases, any authority, though, that says it's a constitutional right to be present for a hearing, to actually be physically present? Does it rise to a constitutional dimension?
Your Honor, there is no case that I've found. I've researched that. I'm relying solely on the constitutions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, for making the trip to Bucyrus for oral argument today. We appreciate that. We will take this matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn?